Lent comes early this year, beginning this Wednesday with Ash Wednesday, which means this Sunday is the last Sunday after the Epiphany, which means we have this account of the Transfiguration of Jesus as our gospel reading. Every year on the last Sunday of Epiphany, we do. This final great moment of Epiphany, of knowing about Jesus before they continue the journey that is leading quickly at this point to the cross. We hear the story of the mountaintop experience of the inner circle of disciples. They see the appearance of Jesus change. They see Elijah and Moses. They know Jesus is connected to all that's gone before. They hear God's voice from a cloud. "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." This final great moment of Epiphany before embarking on what would be the final part of Jesus' life on earth. What does this moment teach us about Jesus, about the Christian life, and about being the beloved community? In the middle of this experience, Peter, not knowing what to say, but apparently thinking he should say something, says, "Why don't we build some structures for you, Jesus and Moses and Elijah? Let's build some structures," and implied, "Let's contain this thing. Let's give it some order and get comfortable with what we have here and what we know." But the voice does not say, "Nice idea, build some structures," but rather, "Listen. Listen. Listen to Jesus. This is going somewhere. This moment is not the culmination, not the place to remain, but an experience to give you spiritual nourishment for the journey you have in this world." And down the mountain they go, into a world hostile to Jesus, to his message, to his words of wisdom and acts of both love and challenge. These acts and this wisdom that brought people together, broke down divisions, taught that all people are God's children. This was good news and is to most, but not to all. Not to those in positions of power who benefited from systems that favored them, but kept most people poor and subjugated. Those moments of knowing God, of comfort, of spiritual experience, those mountaintop experiences are real and important, and they are gifts to us. In some ways, they are gifts of God just in what they are, an opportunity for God to share God's great love with us, to share a moment with us, and in themselves, they are important and good. And they are also there to enable us to deal with life, the challenges, those day-to-day challenges of life. We can't stay on the mountaintop, but would we want to if we could? Would we want to, knowing that this world needs us to represent Christ in both the halls of power and the less visible alleys of life? Representing Christ, being light in the world, so that we can be a voice of justice and stand with those who need us, who need a friend, who need us to help increase the light in their lives and in our world. I've been wanting to see the movie Selma, and I saw it on Friday. There's so much that I could say about that film. I'm kind of curious, how many people have seen it already? Okay. Go see that film. It's really an amazing film. I could say so much about the heartbreaking brutality and injustice so well portrayed in it, and the determination, courage, and heroism of Martin Luther King Jr. and all those who stood and marched with him, especially those African Americans who so bravely struggled against racism, for generations, of course, but there in that time of Selma, they struggled and fought before any of the cameras or reporters were on the scene. My generation, Gen X, right? My generation is something of a bridge generation between the days of legal segregation in this country and what came after. Born in 1968, I don't remember segregation or the worst of obvious, totally unchecked, basically legal racism in this country. But I do remember being bussed around to different schools in Winchester, Virginia in the early 1970s as the white majority, and what a huge majority. There were actually very few people of color in Winchester then or now. And yet still they felt this need to fight against integration. I didn't know at the time why I had to change schools. It didn't make any sense. I'd be interested to have a group discussion of this movie with you, to hear what touches you, what comes up for you, what memories come to you, how it inspires you. As the movie ends, there's a song, as the credits roll, a song that mentions Ferguson. Sadly, some of our memories of injustice and brutality are not very old. As far as we've come, the struggle to end racism in this country continues. The same day that I saw the movie happened to be the same day that I accompanied Grant to his interview with the Diocesan Committee on Priesthood. This was Grant's interview for what we call postulancy. If one is approved by the committee and then made a postulant by our bishop, then one is on the road to seminary and ordination. But what does that mean? What can it mean? And I can ask the same question about baptism. What does it mean to commit oneself to Christ? It means we can't stay on the mountaintop, that's for sure. The life of Martin Luther King Jr. and the lives of those who were with him at that time in the fight against racism shows the power of a lived faith, engaging the matters of the day, engaging and challenging the evils of the times in which we live. The movie Selma shows the church being the church, what that can be. It is beautiful and it is scary, because it often requires sacrifice. It may require your life, my life, as it did for Martin Luther King Jr. and others, and still does. Having just been at those diocesan interviews that vet individuals' sense and call to ordained ministry and seeing that movie, well, it made me wonder, for what do we think we are interviewing aspirants? To be part of something that's a set structure, predictable and safe? Or are we interviewing for ordination and baptizing people for a calling that involves sacrifice and struggle against the powers and principalities? Let's build some structures, Peter says. And God says, listen, listen. And Jesus leads them down the mountain into the messiness of everyday life. The Christian life requires ongoing discernment, listening, and then acting on what we believe God is calling us to do. You'll be happy to know that that came out in those interviews on Friday. It's about discernment, listening, a lifelong process about what God is calling us to do in both the small things and the big things, no matter what the cost. There have been many times that Christians and churches have tried to stay on the mountaintop, choosing not to engage the issues of the day, people actually maintaining that the spiritual life is not about those matters, not about politics or economics or the environment. We hear that still. But that is a terrible misunderstanding of Christianity. That would be like getting a driver's license and never driving a car. But it can go just as wrong the other way, too. It's not a good idea to drive a car without learning how to do it and getting a license. Deep faith, deep connection with God, combined with a love of people and justice for all, is a powerful, powerful combination. We come down from our mountaintop experience with Jesus ready to be about God's work in the world. If you find these ideas interesting, provoking, I think you'd really like our Lenten program for this year. We will be reading and discussing Howard Thurman's book, Jesus and the Disinherited. First published in 1949, this book was a favorite of Martin Luther King Jr. It is said he always carried a copy with him. Howard Thurman and his work are described in the foreword to the most recent edition by Vincent Harding in these words: "This seminal work can be described as a profound quest for a liberating spirituality, a way of exploring and experiencing those crucial life points where personal and societal transformation are creatively joined." These are beautiful words. I'm going to say that again. "A way of exploring and experiencing those crucial life points where personal and societal transformation are creatively joined." Vincent Harding goes on to say about the book, "This is the centerpiece," and then referring to Howard Thurman, "of the Black prophet mystic's lifelong attempt to bring the harrowing beauty of the African American experience into deep engagement with what he called the religion of Jesus. Ultimately, his goal was to offer this humanizing combination as the basis for," and listen to this, "an emancipatory way of being, moving toward a fundamentally unchained life that is available to all women and men everywhere who hunger and thirst for righteousness, especially those who stand with their backs against the wall." And the author of the foreword puts his last words in quotation marks because Howard Thurman, through this book, he talks about those who stand with their backs against the wall. And while he's writing really a pretty long time ago about sort of a specific thing, it is so current and applies to everyone who stands with their backs against the wall. The story of Jesus' transfiguration comes to us today for our ongoing transformation. Jesus and his friends came down the mountain, and so do we, so as to experience those life points where personal and societal transformation are creatively joined. Through God's grace, we're able to listen and discern God's call to us. Both God's call to us to be nourished spiritually by God and God's call to us to engage the issues and concerns of our times so as to live into the fullness of who God calls us to be for our benefit, the benefit of others, and to God's glory. Amen.